we're starting our third class on the Nefesh HaChaim. We are on Perek Gimel, Chapter 3, Page Dalet. As a matter of fact, we just touched on to Page Hay. If I'm not mistaken, we ended right about Page Hay. And this is where Reb Chaim is telling us the final definition of a person being created in the image of God, putting together the idea of Tzelem and the idea of Elohim, and saying that just like the Almighty is the master of all forces, and he every second of the day keeps all those forces moving with his will, by his will, similarly man has been given dominion and sovereignty over the thousands of spiritual worlds that lead up to this world, and they're all put in man's power, so to speak, to increase or decrease the flow of spirituality, or increased negative sources of negative spirituality. They're all in man's potential. And then the last thing we ended off last week is, and it's just like God, every second of the day is affecting the world, so is it too that man, every second of the day, his actions are affecting the world. There are no quote-unquote parv actions. The actions are either bringing forces of good to the world or forces of negativity to the world. It's not, there's no breaks. That's, I think, the last point we ended off with. Correct? Do you have anything else in the notes? So it was kind of in the middle of a sentence. And so the Almighty did this. So we'll pick it up at the top of the page. How all the worlds will be opened or closed based on, we'll repeat the top line now. In the English, it should be about somewhere in the middle of chapter 3. Somewhere in the middle of chapter 3, it's, let's see, it's right at the end of the paragraph, first paragraph, chapter 3, something like that, maybe a little further on, no, towards the bottom of the page, yeah, about 7-8 lines from the bottom of the first page. Okay, so what does he do? So everything depends on every activity. Now he says a new, so al pi kol prate sidran hago, so based on all the particulars of the actions of man, b'chol inyanov in all his activities, b'chol eis v'rega mamish, every second, every moment, actually. Now he says another point. So it's based on every one of your actions, that's based on a second point now. Kifi sharasho ha'elyon. Depending on the upper root that each person has. What does he mean by that? So this is a similar idea that Luzzatto talks about. And what he's trying to tell us over here is that not everybody will affect worlds the same way, even with similar actions. You could have two people doing the same action, and their impact on the world will be different. You could have a person who's just starting out in Avodas Hashem, starting out learning how to serve the Almighty, does a mitzvah, and you could have somebody who's been involved in it for a long time. And what can very well happen is that the one who's been involved in a higher, for a longer time, maybe on a higher level of spirituality, and his effect will be greater than the other person. The person will understand more what he's doing. There'll be more care in what he's doing. It will have a greater impact based on the greater knowledge he has of what he's doing. Okay? And therefore, by virtue of the act itself, there isn't the same effect one person as much as the other, even though the acts on the physical plane could be totally identical. Okay? There are those who could have a further reach with their good deeds than other people. And it'll be predicated on their shorish haneshama, where their root of their soul is situated, and also the particular level that the person finds himself on. In other words, we're not getting into details tonight, but your soul starts from a very high place, from a very holy place. Now, some people have holier souls than others, start from higher places of a greater sophistication, and that means to say there's a greater potential that person has. That person comes on an entry level that is higher, on a higher spiritual plane than others. All right, you can't deny that the Vilna Gaon came from a higher root soul than you and I. I mean, you just can't deny it. I mean, it was nearly from birth you could tell the difference. It was head and shoulders different than other people. Now, why God would do that is the same, to try to know that answer is to know why are people created different. Why is someone given an IQ of 150 and someone an IQ of 100? That's the way God wants it. He makes people different for different missions to accomplish, and the God in His ultimate wisdom knows who has what missions to accomplish. And that's a critical point. So everyone has a job to accomplish. Everyone has to maximize their own potential. That's all you have to be concerned about. So there are those who have greater souls. Plus, a person can have a great soul, but has to develop it. You could have a great soul and you just waste it, and you fritter it away. So you've got to develop it as well. We're told, Luzzatto gives us a good example of how Rav Yonasan ben Uziel, one of the great rabbis of the Talmud, he was one of the great students, and when he would study Talmud, another great rabbi would study Talmud, I mean, there would literally be fire coming out of him. Okay, we can't understand what that means. But if a bird would pass by, it would be destroyed by the fire of his learning. Okay, there's a lot of mystical meanings over there. Other people are learning it's not doing any of that. Okay, so in other words, great souls that are developed can accomplish much more than other people. That's what Reb Chaim is saying over here. So every action depends on the root soul which you come from and how you've developed that root soul as well. Okay? You could have a parable, you know, people have different pumps with different pumping abilities, right? Someone has a pump that can pump out 100 gallons an hour, and someone only 5 gallons an hour. Okay, that's the pump you got. And then you have to develop the pump to make sure the pump works to its maximum potential and you don't waste pumping power. And you have to work on that as well. So that will depend. Everyone has their own job, and they have to maximize their job. And therefore, people can accomplish different things in the higher worlds based on where their root is and how much they've developed those roots. Okay? Now, with this, another interesting thing is explained. Therefore, the tzaddik, this is why the actions of a tzaddik are much more far-reaching than the regular person in either direction. Meaning his mitzvahs will have a farther reach and get a bigger bang for the buck, so to speak. But on the other hand, there's a downside. He's going to be much more responsible for any wrongdoings that he does. Now, what's the logic for that? So on the technical level, you could say very simple. On the technical level, you can say, well, he knows better. And since he knows better, he should have done better, and therefore he's more responsible. And therefore, he'll get a greater punishment. Again, when you'll see the righteous suffering, it could be they may have done the same sin as somebody else, or even a lesser sin. But because they should know better, right, they'll be more accountable. But that's just a mechanical reason. There's a much more reality-based reason. The deeper reason why the tzaddik will suffer more is because the action, as we said, depending on where you're from, will have a greater reach. That's true in the positive realm, and all the more so in the negative realm. If a tzaddik does something negative, he's hitting higher spheres of world that he's going to be misdirecting and mischanneling because of his sins, and will have a greater domino impact, so to speak, on more spiritual realms than the negative person. You know, no different than if the, let's say a parable to someone is the Secretary of Defense. Two people work for the government. One is the Secretary of Defense, and one is the janitor in the White House. Okay, they both go to the White House, right? No, I don't know if Secretary of Defense works in the... No, he works in the Pentagon, eh? So anyway, you got the janitor in the Pentagon, okay? And you got the Secretary of Defense, right? So now, Secretary of Defense, he can do a lot of things. He could save the country. He can do a lot of great things. He makes a mistake, the country could lose the war, and they're finished. Okay, the janitor, what's the worst thing he can do? There'll be a backlog, clutter, the door floors will be dirty. I mean, what's the worst thing the janitor can do? Right, he'll shred some documents he wasn't supposed to shred. I mean, what's the worst he can do? What's the best he can do? Clean floors, it's appreciated. It's a good work environment, people will work better. He's done his job, but how bad can he do things? Secretary of Defense can blow up the country. if he makes a mistake. So tzaddikim, who have these much more responsible positions of being connected to higher worlds, therefore the negative results can be a lot worse, since they have a truer dimension of tzelem elokim. They have more effect than others have, and therefore the damage can be so much worse. That's why the Talmud says the Almighty scrutinizes the actions of the righteous k'chut hasara, like a thread of a hair. Tzaddik does a little thing wrong. What do you mean, what's the big deal? You know where his little thing is reaching? It's going way up there. And it's going to affect terribly so many things. That little thing, because how far it goes, that's where the impacts are even greater. While the little you and me, I mean, how far will our reach go? A couple worlds, you know, not so. We do terrible. You affected that, but not any higher. Not any higher. And therefore, the tzaddik can get slammed. The punishment he can get can be far worse than we could ever imagine, because we don't realize how far potentially damaging his actions can be. So this could be one side explanation why the righteous seem to suffer more than they should, is because their actions impact much more than ours do. Okay, questions?
You know, once in a while, like a janitor or an interdepartmental coordinator can pull the plug on a power plant and do something that has a huge effect, right? I mean, once in a while.
Well, usually the janitors won't have the... Okay, yeah. I think you understand the the parable we're trying to bring out over here. Yeah?
This seems a little bit disturbing here, because unless you're going to tell us the other half of the coin...
It's going to be a lot of disturbing things tonight.
Somebody has an impoverished soul, you know, based on a tzaddik. So they self-assess and they say, well...
Based on a tzaddik? What do you mean?
There's a
lower soul.
A lower
shorish and neshama, lower root.
But you say it was a continuum. It wasn't just black and white, you know, two types of souls. There's a continuum.
Yeah, there's hundreds, there's millions. Yeah. Different levels. Yeah.
So you
say a lower level.
Unless you're going to say that there's somebody with the lowest of levels of souls, if they, the mitzvahs that they do, you know, it doesn't matter what mitzvahs they do, they can't have any effect on the...
They'll affect where they're supposed to have their effect. Every person has a mission that has to affect his area. Right? It's a cumulative effect. It's a cumulative effect. Everybody has to do their job. If everybody does their job, they do their little niche, then the ultimate goal of what the purpose of the world gets completed. Okay? Doesn't get overshadowed. The Secretary of Defense does not clean the floors. And you have to have clean and shiny floors. It's got to be too. And the Secretary of Defense is not going to be involved in that. He's involved in other things. You want everything to run perfectly.
If the janitor turns around and says, you know something, I couldn't be bothered going in today, and really, it doesn't...
So, you know, and that will have a negative effect.
Well,
but it will be marginal. It will be marginal. It will be relatively marginal, but it will have a damaging effect to the fact that, you know, you go into a working environment, if every day it's dirty, it's not good. It's not good. It has some kind of effect. Obviously, you want it to be done because you're paying money for it. So it has a certain value. So in the terms of the spiritual worlds, there's a certain value. We can't measure. You know, it doesn't mean that one person is better than the next. No, that's exactly not true. The Secretary of Defense is not any better than the janitor. The only thing the Almighty measures is one thing. Did you give it 100%? That's the only thing the Almighty asks you. Why he gave you this job, it's none of your business. The Almighty decided why you should have this job.
You're saying the rewards and punishments are equal.
Your reward will be based on how much of your job did you accomplish.
All right, so you're saying the rewards and punishments are equal then for everybody based on effort, not on accomplishment. You've just said that somebody with a bigger soul can accomplish...
Let's rephrase that. The rewards will be on different levels too. The appreciations of the rewards will be on different levels too. He'll get the maximum he's supposed to get. Someone will get the maximum. You know, and it's not just one thing. It's a collective soul from previous lifetimes. There's all other factors involved over here. But what this person has, this is his ultimate goal. He'll get the most he's supposed to get. The most he's supposed to get, he's going to get. He's going to get it. And for whatever reason God wants to give him, that's what he gives him. And he'll have the satisfaction no less than the other person. He will have maximized what he has to give, and he has his maximum satisfaction that he has. The tzaddik can get his maximum satisfaction. Just because it's a different higher level doesn't matter. It's a different soul. They have different needs to be satisfied. You can set in a physical world, you can relate to that idea. The janitor can be satisfied if you give him a 3-week vacation. He's totally satisfied. He has what he wants. The CEO needs something else to be satisfied. Each one does their job the way it should be done. They'll get for their soul total satisfaction. They'll get total satisfaction. But you're right, the repercussions are different. What you've built for the world, one will build more, one will build the other. But that's not anyone's concern. Your concern is to do 100% your job. And based on the soul that you have, you'll have a satisfying reward that will ultimately satisfy what you need.
Rabbi? Yeah. Can tzaddik, this righteous person, can they do neveras that are not obviously not righteous, but can they still be a tzaddik? It means that can they eventually nullify their neveras and become a greater person?
Can who?
Can a tzaddik? Or somebody?
Anybody can. You could become greater after you do your averas.
Okay. So can
you can use averas as stepping stones for growth. Sounds familiar? This morning's class.
Right.
Yeah, anybody can.
Okay. But what a tzaddik wouldn't do an avera then, automatically. Or have there been tzaddiks in the past who've done averas, okay, and eventually have done things that they've been recognized as tzaddikim?
Yeah. What does King David say? Ein tzaddik asher yichi baretz asher yasa tov v'lo yechata. There's not a tzaddik who doesn't live in the world that does good and doesn't sin. There are only three human beings who ever lived that did not sin in the history of the world. Just three. Okay? Well, there's an argument in two different midrashim. So one says a particular three, one says a different three. Could be four, but it's basically three. Three.
I didn't know
them. Huh?
I didn't know them.
You don't know them?
I didn't know them.
They lived a long time ago. Yishai is one, Amram is the other, and David's son, Kol Ev. Not to be mixed up with what? Not to be mixed up with another one. And one opinion says Binyamin. It's a machlok. Okay,
Can you elaborate on your comment, collective soul from previous life?
I don't want to get into that now. We'll have for another time. Let's not get beyond what we have to do. I got a certain agenda I want to accomplish today, and I don't want
to
get
sidetracked. Will we get to it eventually?
In this book, I don't know. I don't think so. But we're not going to get into everything. We'll leave that for other books. If you want to go, Book of Job, tape number 26. We talk about transmigrated souls. Okay, I think it's 26. If it's not 26, it's 27. I can't remember so well, but we talk about that. Now, what kind of soul you get depends on who your parents were, depends on the yichus you had, depends on historical situations. There's a lot of factors in why you get the kind of soul you get. Okay, but it's out of your control. It's nothing to ponder about. Reb Chaim is just saying, how much you can affect the world is how far deep your soul is rooted. That's all you got to really know. That's all you got to know. And some people have a higher reach than others. And that's the way it is. The Almighty understands who to give what things to and what challenges this person will have and what challenges that person will have. But again, the only thing you have to consider is do your job 100%. That's the only thing the Almighty at the bottom line is interested in seeing. Has the janitor cleaned the floors every day dutifully? Fine. Then he gets 100% the reward he's supposed to get in the world to come.
How do you know what your job is? How do you know?
Good question. Very good question. One of the answers is know where your strengths lie. Didn't we talk about this last night? Does this sound like a deja vu, huh? So you have to know. Be honest. And where are your strengths? If you know what your strengths are, then move in that direction. Same thing for your children. You have children growing up. One child you could see is a genius, and he loves to study Torah. So then you know what you do: sit him in front of a Talmud all day long, raise him up to be a person who's going to be a great rabbi. If you have another one who doesn't have the zitzfleish and can't sit around and he's more mechanically inclined, then you know let him run the mechanics behind the CMHS. Or whatever, you know, let them get involved in that area, right? And wherever the talent, I mean, God doesn't make it hard for you. He's not, God's not, oh, it's going to be a really hard game for you to figure out what it's pretty obvious. You see your children grow up, you kind of know where they've got their natures to go and guide them based on their natures and tell them to whatever they're going to be 100% honest and sincere in doing what you should do and doing it for the sake of God. And then you got nothing to worry about. This in Judaism, there isn't this idea as you're looking over your shoulder to see what the other guy's doing. There's no comparisons. Now, that's a problem. We have trouble relating to that because, unfortunately, the best form of Jewish education has vanished. The best form of Jewish education was parent to child. That's what it was meant to be. When a parent teaches a child, they're not looking at the other kids down the block. They're looking at their own child. And they're seeing what talents does my child have, how can I nurture his talents the best, and that's what my interest is in. Unfortunately, society has changed. We're forced to send our children to school, got to lunk 25 kids together in one room. You have to start setting standards, and everybody loses from that, except the quote-unquote average student that doesn't exist, right? So then that becomes a problem. Then there's standards, and you have to compare, and those are like totally non-Jewish value systems that unfortunately we have to live with if we're going to be schooling kids. All right? But God forbid, the whole idea, whenever I was teaching children, I never compared kids. I never would publicize their scores. And I would only compare the child based on his past achievement. How did you measure up against your past achievement? And, you know, that's the only basis of... if I'd give him reading tests, I said, oh, you did it. You read 25 words last week. Maybe you could do 30 this week. Although the other kid could be doing 110. I didn't tell the other kid what the other kid was doing. It doesn't help. It doesn't help his own growth. So the same thing. Don't look at the tzaddik. That's not your business. The tzaddik has his own agenda. Focus on what your agenda is. If you're not clear, ask an objective third party who could maybe sense your strengths. Maybe you have too much ego in the way. Your ego won't admit to you that maybe you have to be a good janitor and don't try to be an unsuccessful CEO. Okay? And they have to know and measure where your strengths are. Or a good Rebbe should be able to tell you your strengths. Alright? So that's one way. Another thing we said yesterday is invariably you'll never be able to know what kind of strengths you have if you haven't learned some degree of Torah. Because the chemistry of Torah brings your reality out. And if you don't get exposed to Torah, you don't even know what direction you're attuned towards. So those are critical components that have to be there. So people don't ever learn Torah and don't look at their strengths. They can talk us, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. But it's not that hard. The Almighty sends situations that kind of tell you what you should be doing. Just look at the signs. And, like for myself, I personally firmly believe I wound up where I was supposed to wind up. You know, and that's the way God like sends it to you in a certain way. You could fight it. You can try to do other things. You could have different notions, right? And I had different notions at certain times. And I said, Almighty said, no, that's not supposed to be for you. And you eventually kind of fit where it has to be. And and for some people, it's pretty easy. I mean, I hate to use stereotypes now. My wife always get into these discussions. Well, what should I do? I say, what should you do? Kind of, or you have 8 kids. You have a Shiloh? You have a question what you're supposed to do? You'd have a bigger caseload than certain social workers. I mean, you've got 8 children to raise. I mean, what's the question what do you have to do in your life, right? So sometimes the answers are pretty obvious for some people. But I think the main thing is look at what your strength is, and then you know what the Almighty wants you to do. Maybe you have a lot of things to do, but that's usually a way to figure it out. Okay, let's go ahead. We didn't finish the paragraph still. So according to your root and predicated on shel maisa v'dibura v'machshavosav, depending on the actions, speech, and thought. Ke'ilu hu gam kein, and now what does it come out? That man, it's like he is also habal koach shelohem kivyachol, as if he is the one who's the source of the strength. In other words, we're going to begin to see there's a certain partnership between God and the human race. That's what's evolving over here. God's the source of all the energy, the ultimate source of the energy. But we are, so to speak, I hate to use the word, like the power brokers of the source of the energy. That's one way to look at it. Okay? So you got the source, but the source without the broker bringing it in isn't going to get anywhere. All right? That's one way of looking at it. So that's what he said. Now he'd like to give you some sources. So we'll run through the sources quickly. V'amru zal be'echa rabbosai, and a rabbi said in the Medrash in Echa, it says like this, Rabbi Akiva b'shem Rabbi Yehuda ben Simon omer, Rabbi Akiva said in the name of Rabbi Yehuda ben Simon, Bizman shi'yisrael osin ritzona shel makom, at the time when the Jewish people do the will of the Almighty, what happens? Mosifin koach bigvur shel mala, they add strength to the force of the forces of heaven. Kemad at amrit, like it says in the verse, be'elokim nasechoyu, through Elohim, through God, we will become an army. In other words, we give force to the Almighty when we're doing the correct things. Ubizman she'ein Yisrael osim ratzono shel makom, and when the Jewish people do not do the will of the Almighty, kivyachol, as it were, so to speak, matishin koach gadol shel malo, they weaken the very powerful forces of above. Dichsiv, as it says in Deuteronomy, Sur Yeladcha, the rock that gave birth to you, Teshi, you have weakened. So to speak, it's like you weaken God's power, because the blessings can only come if we allow the channels to be open. And by doing wrongful things, we misdirect the channels, and the blessings don't come. And it's as if we have weakened God. That's the way God has set up the system. For whatever reason He deemed it fit, God set up the system that the amount of good He wants to give is totally dependent on what mankind asks for. That's how He made up the system. That is what makes man partners in the creation. That's what happens. Man is a partner in the active the ongoing creative forces of the world. Man is a partner. And God has set up the system saying, how much is going to come in is how much you deserve and how much you ask for. That's what's going to come in. And that's what it means, we add or detract strength from God. Ubekama makomos bezohar, and in many places in the Zohar HaKadosh, where he says, skip a half a line to the brackets. See, in this work, wherever he quotes the Zohar, in the Aramaic, so the author here has given you the Hebrew of it, so it's easier to understand. So he says, Chete ben Adam, the sins of man, osim pagam lamala, they create blemishes above. So therefore, every action of man isn't restricted to himself or his immediate environment, but it affects all the worlds. V'chein lahepech, and also the opposite. Good actions will do good things. V'zeo shomra kosov, and this is what the text says, tenu oz le'elokim. King David said, give strength to Elohim. Notice every word where it talks about strength or taking away, which godly word is always used? Elohim. Doesn't say tnu os to yud, hey, and vav, hey, or other names. Because again, this is the continuous force, master of force name. And that's all dependent on how we allow those forces to come in. Ubezohar resh parshas bo, and in the Zohar, in the beginning of parshas bo, it says, this is referring to the first chapter in Iyov. See, we never get away from the book of Job. It talked about in Rosh Hashanah, where all the forces, the angelic forces, stand before God. It says, Vayi Ayom, it was on that day, Vayavo, and all those forces came, Vayisatzi Valashem, to stand before Hashem. So skip about four lines to the bracket, and now the Zohar explains. Very interesting. Kishirotzim Lamod Lekatrig Alosim Maishim Shel Yisrael. When the forces of prosecution want to go and bring evidence against the Jewish people, what are they also doing? Al Hashem Vaday Omdim Lekatrig. It's as if they're prosecuting against God too. It's exactly what's happening. They prosecute against the Jews, and they're able to produce enough evidence. The Jewish people have done wrong things. Right? So what is that? It's really a prosecution against God. Why? Because then God, if they're correct, they'll be deemed correct. The Jewish people will suffer. And therefore the channels of spirituality will be locked up and won't be able to go down. Okay, now there's a lot of symbolism here. It's not as simple as there's a court case and is that. It's just giving you ideas. There's a lot of calculations involved till decisions are made, and they're not really made outside of the realm of God. This is all ways written so mankind can understand based on man's understanding, but that's not really what's happening up there. But it's a conceptually that when there's prosecution against the Jews in the heavenly spheres, it's as if there's prosecution against God, because ultimately God won't be able to bring the things He wants into this world.
Abraham just talked about evil as almost like a separate kingdom. But here, he doesn't talk about sins having that effect. He talks about the sins simply weakening God.
But, again, it's not really, see, he's going to really talk about this in the second gate. There's nothing can weaken God. God, the essence of God can't be touched. Cannot be touched. We have cannot fathom the essence of God. And he's going to like do three full chapters on this concept. What God does, and again, I'm just going to say it, I'm not going to explain it because it's going to be later. But what God does is God created a form of a device in which we can relate to God. He created a system in which it looks like God has all these human qualities, so to speak. And it looks like God can be affected. Why? He created that so we could have some kind of relationship with him. What was the Star Trek term I used in the morning? Those holograms. You know, see Star Trek, those holograms, holodeck, whatever it is, where you create this image, but it's not the image. But you're able to relate with that image. That's an image you can relate with. So God, the way he interacts with this world, so to speak, he creates the interaction, and we can deal with that interaction, although that really isn't God. It's a created thing that God makes to manifest some kind of way we can relate to God. And in those ways, we can weaken that component, quote-unquote, of God. It's not a separate thing, but it's the only part of God we could relate to, the way he acts. So in those ways, we could look that evil is doing something over there. Okay, but essentially, evil is a tool of God, too. He's on the same team. That's what the Das Tfunos gets into that a lot.
As a force.
But it's all, that force is from God too. That force is from God too. It's not for, and there can, that's the whole unity principle. The unity principle is there's nothing outside of God. All evil comes from God. That's what it says when God created the sixth day and everything was very good. So the Medrash says, what do you mean very good? It's a double expression. It's good and very. So it says good, he created the forces of good. Very good, he created the forces of evil. So there's no forces against God because God created all the forces. They're all on the same team.
What I'm saying is that in one case, the sins are weakening the rock. I'm just reading it here. Weakening the rock that begat thee. It's weakening something.
So what did Reb Chaim say?
As opposed to strengthening.
Oh, there's other ones that says you strengthen. The other ones.
Good deeds strengthen the force.
And bad deeds weaken it.
Weaken the force.
Right.
But it's different than talking about evil as a concept that is strengthened by sins.
That concept exists too, and we'll talk about that a while down the road too. It's going to giving strength to evil, which will bring down the forces of negativity. We'll talk about that. There are those issues where you are giving strength. You're taking the holy energies and, so to speak, pumping them into evil areas.
Some sins will just weaken and the forces.
Well, it's two concepts at the same time, really. It's, you know, the flow of goodness is stunted, and then other forces will come instead. You'll give strength. There's two things. You'll stunt the positive force and give strength to a negative force. Where the negative force from? We'll talk about that another time. There's a lot to talk about there. All right. The only thing we're trying to get over is the feel for the idea of how consequential are man's actions and how vitally interconnected it is with God's manifestation of this world is predicated on our actions. That's the point he wants you to drive home, and he's doing it, you know, very thoroughly. All right, so let's just do a little bit more. Shekasher Yisrael osi masim shelo kasherim, when the Jewish people do actions that are not good, kivyachol, as it were, matishin kochosh al kadosh baruch hu, they weaken the forces of Hashem. V'chasher osi maisim ksherim, when they do positive acts, nosin tokef v'koach al kadosh baruch hu, they give strength and power to God. V'alzei akosav, and this, the verse is all the Zohar. It's all with the verse of tnu oz le'elokim, give strength to God, v'ameh, with what? V'masim ksherim, with good deeds. With good deeds you give strength to God. You enable God to do the positive things he wants to do in the world. And therefore, Reb Chaim concludes in the last two lines, V'lachein, and therefore, Omar, the words always used are, Le'elokim, give strength to Elokim, v'chein, and similarly, be'elokim nasa chayol, through God we will become an army. Were all those words, sheperusho bal hakochos kulam, it's the master of all forces. Therefore, the name of Elokim refers to the being that's responsible for all forces and feeds all the forces. And who's responsible for that? Us. Through our activities, we merit that Hashem should bring all these forces in the world, or not. That's why the word Elokim is always the word used in terms of weakening and strengthening, because those are the forces we weaken and strengthen. So now we'll go to chapter 4. Now he kind of concludes the idea. V'zos toras ha'adam. And this now becomes the reality of man. Kol ish Yisrael, every Jewish person, al yomar belibo chas v'shalom, don't say in your heart, God forbid, ki mo'ani u'ma kochi, what am I and what is my strength? Lifol b'maseh hashvelim shum inyan b'olam, to be able to accomplish with my lowly actions anything of significance in the world. You know, man is bit, but a speck of dust amongst the vast cosmos. What can man accomplish? God forbid, don't you ever say that. Right? Because if you say that, what will that lead a person down what road? To say, why bother doing mitzvahs? Why bother? What could my mitzvahs do anyway? Right? That's what Job said. Job said, what could you ever do to hurt God? You can't do anything to hurt God. My actions are so insignificant. There's a vast cosmos out there. What can I ever accomplish? And if I do a sin, what's the big deal? My actions aren't significant. So Reb Chaim is telling, you know what that is? You know what that kind of talk is? That's a Yetzirah trap. That's a trap of the evil inclination. What a person has to be is very conscious that you're a messenger of God in this world and you can accomplish a lot. That's what Reb Chaim is saying. Amnam. But Yavin v'yeda, a person should know it's the opposite. V'yikba, and he should establish b'machshavos libo in the heart, in the thoughts of his heart. Shechoprate masav v'diburav u'machshavosav koleis v'rega, every detail of every action, speech, and thought, every moment, lo isavidu chas v'shalom, God forbid, is never lost. There is an eternality to everything you do. It's never lost. Like the tape recorder is running, right? Let's, in relation to the existence, my existence in relationship to the tape recorder. Okay, tape recorder is running. Whatever I say is never lost. It's being picked up every second. Turn off the tape recorder, in relationship to the tape recorder, whatever I say is being lost. It's gone. So Reb Chaim is saying, human beings, you're always connected. You're always connected. And whatever you do is eternally there. You've affected worlds one way or another. And in the ultimate plan of things, it's always, that effect somehow in some way is always there. You've done something. It's not just, I went and did something and it really didn't accomplish anything. Everything does something. We don't know what the effects are, but it's accomplishing everything. That's what Reb Chaim is saying. Umarab umasav, and how great are his actions, man's actions. Umaod gadlu v'ramu, they are so great and exalted. Shekol achas, that each and every one of your actions, ola kafish rasha, will rise up according to what the root soul that's connected to. Lifol pulasa begavi meromim, to affect what it's needed to affect in the highest of places. Volamas v'tzachzachos oras el yonim, in the world and the splendorous upper lights. Your actions are doing unbelievable things. And now with this, in the gloss, which is not in the English translation, is a beautiful interpretation now to one of the Mishnahs in Pirkei Avos. This is just, this next, just in and of itself is a gem. He doesn't bring you the whole source. I'll tell you the source outside, and then we'll just see the part that he tells you. The second chapter of Pirkei Avos, the end of the first Mishnah, it's Reb Judah the Prince, tells us the following. He says, Histakel b'shlosha dvarim. Focus and look at three things. Ve'ein atah bo lidei avera. And you'll never come to doing a sin. That's what Judah the Prince says. What are the three things? So he says, Da mala mala mimcha. No, what's above you? What's above you? Ayin roa, a seeing eye. Ozen shomas, a listening ear. V'chol ma'asecha b'sefer nichtav. And all your actions are written in a book. Okay, now, how do you understand that Mishnah? What's the Mishnah saying? In your own words, what's the Mishnah saying?
Everything's being recorded.
Everything's being recorded.
Every sentence.
So if everything's recorded, you wouldn't sin, right? Right. It's not like God's asleep. That's the idea. So I want to ask you a question. What are the three things? It says, look at three things and you'll never come to sin. You want to tell me what the three things are?
What's above you?
Listening ear.
Listening ear.
The eye.
The eye.
The eye.
The
ear.
So is that four? What is it?
No, because what's above you is Hashem, and we're relating to him as the ear, the eye.
Okay, but I don't understand. It's basically one idea? Okay, in a nutshell, forget about the first three words. Look at three things. Forget about that. It didn't exist. What's going to deter you from sinning?
To recognize it, who you're standing before.
Okay.
That he sees and hears and knows everything.
Okay, but that's one thing. Like you think he sees and doesn't hear? Or he doesn't write it down or he forgets? I mean, what's the main idea? You know what? You ain't going to get away with nothing. What'll keep you from sinning? You know what? God is not asleep. He knows what you're doing and he's there. Eric, if you put God's presence in front of you, you'll never sin. So I ask you, how many things is it?
One.
I mean, it's poetic license, flowery talk. But how many things is it? Bottom line, how many things is it? The commentators have a big struggle to try to, why do they say three? I mean, three means three. That's as my Rebbe would say, that's a boach teretz. That's a stomach answer. You know, it came from the stomach, not...
But the eye is the Torah, the hearing is the oral tradition, and what was written, oral, is hearing, audio, and written in the book, online.
All right, good try. You're trying hard. Okay. But it's a problem. It's a problem. This is not an easy mission to understand. You know, you learn Pekir, obviously. If you just read it straight, there's never any problems. You start thinking you got millions of problems in Pirkei Avos. Doesn't seem to make any sense. What is it? Three things is three things. You come away. Listen, God sees what you're doing. He sees and hears. Great. That's two things. It's two. You go to a judge. He sees. He hears. He writes it down. It's three things. No, as a judge, it's one thing. No, you should know. There's somebody above you. That's it. It's one thing. There's somebody above you who knows what you're doing. Okay, Russ, going to give it a valiant effort.
I was just going to ask, is it just to put it into human terms so we can understand it? In other words, do we...
No question about it, but still...
So do we not learn, in also in Pirkei Avos, that there's three things that take us out of this world? So this is saying three things that keep you from sin.
Yeah, but those three things that take you out of the world, they're totally three different psychological things. They're totally three different realms. Lust, honor, those things, they're totally different ideas. Jealousy, they're totally, from a psychological point of view, they come from three different places. Here, it's one thing. There's God. There's God, He's watching, and He knows everything. That's one thing. You can't divide up hearing, listening, writing down. So the commentators grapple to try to explain it. So we're going to see Reb Chaim's answer. Now this answer is attributed to many rabbis. You listen to, look in the Lubavitch book, they'll say it's the Baal Shem Tov gets his credit for this one. You go to the non-Chassidic works, they'll tell you it's Reb Chaim Volozhin's for it. So it's, everybody says the idea. Give everybody credit for it. I don't know who said it first. But we'll see inside Reb Chaim says, based on what he said, you'll never look at this Mishnah the same way again. Now we're looking in the gloss. The English doesn't have it. The gloss is like this. The gloss was written by Reb Chaim as well. Bikarov lishmoa, and from what we've learned, it's very close to here. Shigamze bechlal kavonasum zalbovas. This is what was meant in their intention in Pirkei Avos when they said, "Da mala mala mimcha, know what's above you." Ratzaloimer, meaning to say like this: Im ki eincha roa beinecha, even though you cannot see with your eyes. The awesome things that are happening from your actions. Can we realize what we're doing in the upper worlds by the fact we're all sitting around a table on a Wednesday night discussing Torah? We have no idea what's going on up there. Reb Chaim will tell us in the third gate, fourth gate, what's going on. But normally, you don't know what's going on up there. You don't know what buttons you're pushing, what worlds you're moving. We don't know. But they're awesome. They're just awesome. Avoltaida nemana, but you better know and believe. Ki komasha nasa lamala beholamas elyonim gvoe gvoim, that what's happening way up there. Hakol mimchahu, it's all from you. Al pi masecha, according to your actions, la notim, where they lean. Al pi em yetzav yavo, from their mouth they come and go. Now, you got to understand what does he mean over here. So let me go over the four words of the Mishnah. I'll say it the wrong way, and I'll say it the way Reb Chaim says it. The first way was, look at three things you'll never come to sin. What? Da, ma, lamala, mimcha. Da, no. Ma, what? Lamala, what's above? Mimcha, you. Reb Chaim says, read it this way. Da, no. Ma, lamala. That which is happening above. Mimcha is from you. You hear the difference?
You're the
cause. Not da mala, know what's above from you, but just how you punctuate it. Da, no, mala, mala, you know what's going on above.
You're affecting
mimcha,
it.
Mimcha, it's all from you. Now, if you think about that, are you going to sin as quickly? If you're going to realize what kind of worlds you're destroying and the negative impact, it's like the spiritual ecology is being destroyed. Okay, that's all from you. You know how powerful you are. That's what the Mishnah is saying. Okay, so you say, well, that's still one thing, right? No. Let's go further. Now, this is Reb Chaim saying. I'm saying this. You could argue with me, but I think this is the truth. Three things. Let's figure out now. Ayin roa, the seeing eye. Ozen shomas, the listening ear. V'chol masecha b'sefer nichtavim, all your actions are written down. Let's go backwards. It's a lot easier to figure it out. The last one, kol ma'asecha b'sefer nechtavim, all your actions are written down. What is he focusing on? The realm of action. All your actions are going to affect the higher worlds. Oz and shoma, listening ear, all your speech will affect the worlds above. Ayin ro'ah, an eye that sees. What do we mean? A lot of times the Torah, when it says to see, what does it really mean? Vayar, he saw. Abraham saw, but a lot of times it means what? He understood. Many times in the Torah, when it says to see, it means to understand. I see what you mean. Many times in the Torah, the guy's looking at it and says, and he saw him. Of course he saw him, he's there. No, he understood the situation. That's thought. So that's what the Mishnah is saying. You should know. If you just look at one thing, everything that happens in the upper world, it's from you. Either from your thought, from your speech, or your action. They are all doing things up there. Not just action. Speech and thought. All are doing all kinds of things in the worlds above. If you look at those three things and what they're doing, you'll never sin. If you're really conscious of what's happening, how could you ever do such a thing? How could you ever do such a thing? So that's the meaning of the Mishnah over there. Okay? That's the emes of pshat. That's the true pshat in the Mishnah. So in the middle of next summer, ladies at West Mountain, we come to that Mishnah, you could sleep a little then. Okay, we heard it. Okay, let's, so it's interesting that Reb Chaim...